This week, we wrap up the contemporary look at Whither Are We Traveling with Part 11 of Darren A. Lehner's series. Are there not too many well-meaning brethren who are working overtime to make Freemasonry something other than Freemasonry? Should we abandon free will and accord? Should we take positions on public issues of the day? Go all out for materialism and subsidize? Then, we hear a tale from illustrious brother Stephen L. Harrison in this week's Masonic Minute about Winston Churchill and the most difficult decision he ever had to make, to fire on allies. We'll wrap it up with a tarot card draw and contemplate what a specific card could mean in terms of practical application through the lens of Freemasonry. Are you on the verge of a breakthrough or a new success? All this and more. Stay tuned.
Welcome back to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry. Here's your host, Brother Robert Johnson.
Welcome back to the show. This is episode number 541. I want to thank the contributors, fellows, producers, and legacy partners of the WCY podcast. For over 10 years, you all have assisted in bringing this show to millions across the world who have an interest in Freemasonry and its kindred sciences, and I thank you so much for the opportunity to continue to bring this light to all those interested. If you're curious on how you can assist the WCY podcast, head on over to WCYpodcast.com, click on Support the Show, and see how you can help. Not all of us are able to assist financially at various times. And so we also appreciate sharing with your lodge brothers or finding a particular episode that you found enlightening that perhaps you were having a conversation with some brothers or a lodge conversation. Share it with your lodge brethren. They also may enjoy. Thank you for your support. Now, this episode is coming out on what some in the world celebrate as Easter Sunday. So if you are a practitioner of a faith that makes today important, I want to wish you a happy Easter. Presentations that are coming up, I'll be at a table lodge presenting a topic on worldwide brotherhood as a response to one of the elements of the table lodge for Cary Grove Lodge number 1157 right here in Illinois. And then after that, I will be in Manassa Lodge in Manassa, Virginia, on the 6th of May. So, with that, let's get into the education as we are finishing something that we have been doing for 11 weeks. That's 2.5 months of this article series that was put together by worshipful brother Darren A. Lehner's, a contemporary response to Whither Are We Traveling? Whither Are We Traveling, as you'll hear, came out in 1963, an article by Dwight L. Smith. And why this matters, this particular paper, is because in 63, when Dwight L. Smith said all these things about the fraternity and made predictions about what was to come, it's fair to say that not a lot of people within the fraternity listened, as is always the case. It is very rare that any Grand Lodge listens to any outside voice. We kind of have our own echo chambers that we live in. And because every Grand Lodge is sovereign unto itself, nobody wants to listen to anybody else. So, Dwight L. Smith says all these things that are going to happen and we should watch out for them. Nobody listens, and then guess what? All of those things come to fruition. Yikes. And they did rapidly. And in fact, in the early 2000s, the Knights of the North, a loose aggregation of individuals, Masonic writers, some influencers, came together and wrote a response to Whither Are We Traveling, and it was called A Laudable Pursuit, and it was edited by Christopher Hodapp. So you can bet your bottom dollar that Chris probably had a hand in the writing of it as well as editing the book, and it is a wonderful book, and in fact is partly responsible for the reason that myself and several brothers up in the northeastern area of Illinois decided to start a new lodge. And we used quite a bit of the ideas that were in Laudable Pursuit. Now, as just a side mention, if you're interested in Laudable Pursuit, you can download it for free as an archive.org document. It is out there. You can also buy it as a printed book through Lulu Press. I'll throw a link in the show notes to that. And if you're interested in an audio version, that's right, an audiobook version, Space Novum Lodge, my lodge that used it as a reference point for starting a lodge, several members of this lodge, Space Novum, actually got together and produced the audiobook with various readings from different folks in our lodge, including myself. It was engineered by a brother of my lodge, as well as several readings by Spencer Hammond and Julian Rojas and Scott Duvall. And the entire first chapter is read by Chris Hodapp himself. So, if you're interested in any of that, I want you to check it out. But that was in the early 2000s. Now we are in 2022, and we need to take a look at what is the opinion of a new generation of individuals. And so here comes Darren A. Lehners with his contemporary exploration. And if you are curious on any of the earlier 10 parts of this series, just go back 10 episodes. We are on 541. So all the way back to probably episode 529 or 530, somewhere around there. So without any further delay, Whither Are We Traveling? Part 11. By Midnight Freemason contributor, Worshipful Brother Darren A. Lehners. As we finish our exploration of Dwight L. Smith's seminal work, Whither Are We Traveling?, we are wrapping up the exploration to his answers to 10 questions he posed for self-examination of the state of ancient craft Freemasonry in 1963. The questions he asked are as important and relevant now as they were then. This week, we look at question 10. Are there not too many well-meaning brethren who are working overtime to make Freemasonry something other than Freemasonry? Most Worshipful Brother Smith begins by saying that Whither Are We Traveling? Was his anxious question when he began his exploration of subjects that had disturbed him in recent years. He then recalls the promise that he made at the beginning of his exploration, stating that he, quote, shall propose no bright new ideas, not one. All I am going to advocate is that Freemasonry remain Freemasonry, and if we have strayed from the traditional path, we had better be moving back to the main line while there is yet time to restore this prestige and respect, the loyalty and devotion that once was ours, end quote. He continues to say that with the above, he was serving notice that he would not be aligning himself with anyone who seeks to make Freemasonry over and bring it, quote-unquote, up to date, because he understood that in doing so, it would be out of date the next day. He then begins Section 1, proclaiming that in all the land there was weeping, wailing, and gnashing of teeth as the Masonic Gimmick Manufacturing Company Unlimited worked overtime to modernize Freemasonry and align it with all the other organizations they were competing with for the attention of what he calls the quote-unquote tribal American. He then lists the products of the above fictional company that he says Freemasonry is urged to try. Abandon the free will and accord rule, which has placed our craft far above the mine run of societies, and permit outright solicitation. Ape the service clubs, get busy on projects galore in the best Babbitt fashion. Go into the organized, do-good business in a big way. Find an area of the human body that has not been exploited. Set a quota, have a kickoff dinner, ring the doorbells. Subsidize other organizations right and left, and in the doing, ignore, neglect, and starve the parent body. Feminize the fraternity. Carry togetherness to even more ridiculous extremes than we have already. Hire press agents to tell the world, like little Jack Horner, what great boys we are. Masonry is not getting its proper share of publicity, complains one Grand Master. Never mind actions, concentrate on words. Imitate Hollywood. Stage an extravaganza. Bring in all the groups that ever fancied themselves remotely related to Freemasonry. Form the parade, blow the bugle, beat the drums, and cheapen the fraternity. Let Freemasonry take a position on public issues of the day. Stand up and be counted, assuming, of course, that the position the craft takes is in line with our own pet prejudices. Go all out for materialism. Raise money, spend it, build temples, institutions. Subsidize, endow whatever can be had by writing a check. get it. Centralize, centralize, centralize. Pattern Freemasonry after Washington bureaucracy. Let nothing be done modestly by an individual or a lodge. Do everything on the state or national level. The super-duper way. Make a great to-do about local self-government, but accept no local self-responsibility. End quote. Most Worshipful Brother Smith then asks, why does not someone suggest that we try Freemasonry? Going on to state that we haven't been trying it these many years. He proclaims that we have experimented with just about everything that anyone could imagine, so why not just get back to our roots? Let me address some of the above. I agree with many of the points above, however, there are a few that I will address that I disagree with Dwight on. Dwight might be turning over in his grave because of many grand lodges that have adopted a program to invite members. In Illinois, we call it the Invitation to Petition Program. It has worked with some success for many lodges, while it has not worked for others. In any case, I see nothing wrong with soliciting men that you think would be a good Freemason to join the fraternity. They still need to join of their own free will and accord. Investigations, including background checks, still need to be done, and the West Gate still needs to be guarded. However, I don't see invitations to petition doing the craft any more harm than the one-day degree festivals, which are essentially just feeding men to the appendant bodies instead of their own craft lodges. Dwight might also be upset by the, quote, not just a man, a Mason campaign. But I still believe that that campaign alone has been very successful. Speak to any Grand Lodge secretary if you don't believe it's having an impact. Once again, it's still up to the individual lodges to do everything in their power to guard the West Gate. But is having too many potential candidates to interview a real issue? The whole idea of feminizing the fraternity has been written about by me several times. While I personally have no issue with co-ed masonry, as I have seen a co-ed lodge work due to my membership in the Odd Fellows, I understand why many brothers have an issue with it. This being said, I do not think that allowing women to have their own lodges under their own grand jurisdiction is hurting anyone, nor do I think that they practice quote-unquote irregular Freemasonry. I would like nothing more than to have their lodges recognized so that I might visit them, and they can visit ours, but I understand that that is a reality that I might not see in my lifetime. I do think that using it as a solution to cure all the ills of Freemasonry is a gimmick, which is a position that I used to think was a viable solution. While I still have no ill toward them, I do not think that we would see an influx of members in allowing women to join the craft. Lastly, I think that Freemasonry should take a position on some public issues. We have done so in the past. Look no further than our great nation's founding to see how Freemasonry directly impacted the formation of public policy and our government. There was a time not too long ago that Masons were involved in starting public education in several states. I believe that Freemasonry is uniquely qualified to help combat the incivility that is plaguing modern society. We should be able to stand united against the forces of darkness that plague our modern world and combat the ignorance of the conspiracy theories that Freemasonry is a target of. If we do not stand up against hatred of our members that are minorities due to their religious or ethnic backgrounds, are we being true to ourselves as an organization? I personally believe that Freemasonry should embrace our beliefs and be proud of them. It is an unfortunate problem of modern society that everything is politicized, and that even in making a statement in favor of supporting the inalienable rights of man, Freemasonry could find itself as a victim of that. Most Worshipful Brother Smith continues in Section 2, stating that the greatest need of Freemasonry is a membership that has a better understanding of what Freemasonry is and what it is not. He claims that there are only a few Master Masons that know what Freemasonry is, and even fewer are those that know what Freemasonry is not. He states that seniority and rank have little relationship to this ignorance, and that the numbers of masters, past masters, and grandmasters who are ignorant is appalling. He then asks, what happened, saying that We assume the Freemasonry is a fad of the mid-20th century and that we are impatient when Freemasonry does not behave like something that follows a conventional pattern, maintains lobbies, publishes its aims and objectives, conducts drives and campaigns, try to grab headlines and write checks to every benevolent society in an effort to have a finger in every pie. He then states that Freemasonry does none of these, and that isn't it strange that Freemasonry has gained a position of honor and prestige when it doesn't behave in a conventional manner. He begins Section 3 by asking, what is this Freemasonry to which I urge our brethren to return? What are its aims and objectives? What does it do? He then answers by saying that the answer is the first book of Kings, and that even that answer will come as a disappointment. He then goes on to relate the story of Elijah, and how he was in a cave on Mount Horeb convinced that he was the only one of God's children who remained faithful to his trust. He went forth from the cave and stood upon the mountain due to a command from God. Elijah then recounted what happened. From this lesson, Most Worshipful Brother Smith says that Freemasonry erects its temples within the hearts of men, and that even though we may not understand what we are saying when we state, quote, through the improvement and strengthening of the character of the individual man, Freemasonry seeks to improve the community, end quote. He then goes on to say that we say to candidates, I'm assuming this is from his home state of Indiana's ritual, that the, quote, design of the Masonic institution is to make its votaries wiser, better, and consequently happier, end quote. He remarks that in this statement, there is no mention of mass action, pressure groups, resolutions on matters of state policy, nor no pro or anti discussion, no undertakings to cure the ills of the world by making everyone fit one pattern, no running around like chickens with their heads cut off in search of do-good projects to gain favorable notice, no biting of our nails to compete with the service clubs, and no endless busyness which loses sight of Freemasonry's objective. Instead, the message of Freemasonry is the same message that Elijah recounted, that the Lord was not found in the wind, earthquakes, or fires that he witnessed, but rather in that still small voice. He then states the purpose of Freemasonry is the same as it was when the stones were hewn, squared, and numbered in the quarries in preparation for King Solomon's temple. The purpose of Freemasonry, according to Most Worshipful Brother Smith, is to take an individual, just one man at a time, and as good of a man as possible, and try to make a better man out of him. He exclaims, how much the world needs that, and if the technique is outmoded, then the experience of 2,000 years is all wrong. Smith goes on to say that the mere fact that men do not comprehend the purpose of Freemasonry does not mean that Freemasonry has no purpose. It only means that the stones are not being well hewn and squared in the quarries where they were raised. Smith then points out that Freemasonry has not been tried in the balance and found wanting. It has been found difficult and not tried. He goes on stating that more than anything else today, the world needs the kind, gentle healing influence in the hearts of men. And the Masonic institution is looked upon with scorn because it does not operate in the standard convention of our times, but that it is prepared to bear witness to the fact that the conventional way of life in the modern age leaves much to be desired, and that it stands upon its own majestic affirmation that the way to change human systems is to change human lives. He then goes on to quote Dean Roscoe Pound, who stated, quote, Freemasonry has more to offer the 20th century than the 20th century has to offer Freemasonry, end quote. Most Worshipful Brother Smith then asks, whither then are we traveling, and says that he came to the conclusion of his exploration of his faith in the ancient craft, and that it is unshaken, and he is convinced that the solution to Freemasonry's problems is Freemasonry, and then finishes with, why do we not try it? While I agree that Freemasonry tries to be too many things to too many people, I also think that this answer, taken on the surface, is a cop-out. I don't know that you can raise so many interesting questions and have so many interesting points regarding Freemasonry and truly believe that Freemasonry, as it is constituted today, is the answer to its own problems. Instead, what I believe he is trying to say, in a somewhat confusing manner, is that the problems of Freemasonry will be solved in a return to those traditions that Freemasonry once embraced. He is issuing a call to action to return to our roots, to embrace those practices which now have been embraced by the traditional observance movement. I feel that is what he is wanting, a return to the things that worked, and having Grand Lodges embrace these things before it is too late. In the past 11 articles, I have done my best to address this seminal work of Freemasonry through a modern lens. I feel that, like most Worshipful Brother Smith, many of my own issues with the craft would be solved by the return to the roots of Freemasonry. The issue, of course, is getting your particular Masonic jurisdiction to buy into the idea. I hope to live to see a day in Illinois where the TO concept is allowed to thrive. Until then, if you agreed with my observations, we must continue to attempt to make changes to our Constitution and bylaws to allow Freemasonry to become what it once was. Only together, united, can we make change happen? It all depends on the type of Freemasonry you want. I personally won't stop fighting until I get that. Darren A. Laners. I have to agree with a lot of the sentiments that Darren brings up in this piece. I think in the beginning, kind of going linear through this particular article, when Smith talks about the tribal American and the products of the above fictional company, that he says Freemasonry is urged to try these bullet points like imitate Hollywood, let Freemasonry take a position on public issues, yada, yada, yada. You know, I agree with some of these things, and I don't agree with some of them, like Darren. This idea of hiring press agents like Darren, he mentioned the idea of the More Than a Man campaign, which personally, while I agree that Freemasonry is many things to many people, we have to agree it must be more than the often used, we make good men and make them better. We need something more, some sort of rallying call. And I think this is where the More Than a Man campaign comes in, can be used to let those men know who are seeking information on Freemasonry to assist them in finding legitimate Masonic lodges. But most everything in here I have to agree with Darren on. He and I, full disclosure, we're friends. We do other podcasts together. And maybe that's why we're good friends, because I agree with him on so much stuff. Not to say we don't disagree on topics, but in this, I certainly agree. I think the idea of TO Masonry, I have my own views on TO Masonry. I'm not like the biggest huge advocate for traditional observance. That being said, I do feel that it is crucial that every Grand Lodge allow a lodge that wants to be TO to be TO. Very libertarian in the lodge sense. But I hope you enjoyed this 11-week, actually we think we took 12 weeks to do it because we took a break, maybe one or two. This 11/12 week journey into whither are we traveling. I hope that through this work, through these individual examinations of the different parts of the text, you are thinking about these different questions and how they might relate to your own particular lodge. Or maybe you're in the Grand Line and you're thinking about how these particular issues might affect your own grand jurisdiction. We all should be thinking about how these questions affect our grand jurisdiction, because these questions are still relevant today, absolutely. The other thing I would say is that please do not just think that you must tackle all of the things that most Worshipful Brother Smith has laid out here. As the often used quote, how do you eat a whale one bite at a time? This is no different. There are specific parts of these chapters, these 11 parts to the articles, that certainly make more sense for your lodge, yourself, or your organization to tackle first. There's a triage of sorts. My question for the Craftsman Plus this week is, of all of the 11 parts, thinking back, granted, because we just read one and something from today or this episode might be sticking out in your mind, I'm curious to find out what your thoughts in general on Dwight L. Smith's work has been. Do you think he was right or wrong? Do you think he made a little cop-out at the end of his article, as many of us think he did? I won't be as kind as Worship Brother Darren, I think suggesting that Freemasonry try Freemasonry, this is a huge cop-out. It's just like saying Freemasonry is needed today more than it's ever been needed. This is an often said thing that really means nothing without action. Back to what he said in the fictional company portion, he said, never mind actions, concentrate on words. And I think that's kind of what he did here. He concentrated on words as a feel-good at the end so that he wouldn't be maybe like expelled or something for crapping all over the future of Masonry. He ends it on this Masonic feel-good Americana value thing that I think is overplayed. I think we need real solutions. We need real, specific, not these etheric, romanticized ideas solutions, but specific solutions to our problems today. So anyway, let me get off my high horse again and get back to this question. What did you think about all of it? I'd love to hear your thoughts on what Darren thought, what Most Worshipful Brother Smith thought. Was it valuable to go through this? Just looking for your thoughts now that we have completed this large series of articles. Many thanks to Worshipful Brother Darren A. Laners for allowing us to read all of his parts of this series from the Midnight Freemasons right here on the WCY podcast. If you are a fan of Darren's, as I am, please check out his other podcast, which is called Meet, Act, and Part. They have a Masonic podcast. It also features Brother Greg Knott and some others, as well as today's Carl Claudy, Bill Hosler, the author of the 50-Year Mason, or the 50-Year Member. And if you like their podcast, please consider supporting them on Patreon. If you're a fan of any kind of spooky stuff, high strangeness, as it were, please check out a podcast that I do with Brother Darren. It's more adult-oriented, I think. Probably would not have kids in the room. There are language warnings and things. But Darren and I do a podcast about UFOs and paranormal stuff, and that's called Beyond the Fourth Veil. And it's just on YouTube. It's a video series. We have several episodes out, and I hope you enjoy. Next up, let's get into this week's Masonic Minute with the illustrious Stephen L. Harrison.
Wisdom and strength are traits we learn about and are taught to apply in our Masonic degrees. When we think of brothers having these characteristics, we usually infer their positive aspects. But on occasion, we must take painful action that wisdom tells us is the right thing to do, but requires great strength to carry out, and sometimes even greater strength to live with the consequences for the rest of our lives. In 1940, Brother Winston Churchill, a member of Rosemary Lodge 2851 in London, faced such a dilemma. It is difficult to think of Winston Churchill, considered to be one of World War II's great leaders, as a green and untested prime minister. But that is exactly what he was on May 10, 1940, the day he took office. He didn't have to wait long for that first test, however. On the same day, Nazi Germany invaded Belgium, Holland, and France. Churchill immediately realized that if, more likely when, the Germans controlled France, they would also control the French Navy, second only in power in Europe to Britain's. He also knew the combined power of Hitler's Navy with the French fleet would most likely spell defeat for his country. Churchill immediately appealed to United States President Franklin Roosevelt, a fellow Freemason and fellow Navy man, for help. He warned Roosevelt if the Germans controlled the French fleet, they would pose a serious threat to England, and if they defeated England, they would control that navy and pose an even greater threat to the United States. He asked Roosevelt for 50 of the older U.S. destroyers to help bolster the British Navy. In spite of what the two men had in common, President Roosevelt did not know Churchill and assumed the Nazis would roll over Britain as easily as they did France. He also had pledged to keep the United States out of war. He flatly denied the request and subsequent requests that Churchill made. On June 22nd, Germany took over most of France, and Hitler ordered all French vessels to sail home. Although François Darlan, commander of the French Navy, had vowed he would scuttle every ship in the event of a takeover, Churchill did not trust him and feared the Nazis' control of the French Navy was imminent. His back against the wall, Churchill drew up a plan dubbed Operation Catapult to secure the French Navy. Churchill sent a fleet of ships to offer the French three options. They could, one, sail all their ships into British ports. Two, sail their ships alongside British ships as part of an Allied force. Or three, send their entire navy to the West Indies or United States. And what if the French did not comply? Churchill knew he would have to make the most agonizing decision of his life to launch a military attack on a country that was England's ally and friend. The British Navy's main fleet sailed to a Mediterranean port near Oman, Algeria, where it intercepted the strongest part of the French fleet still moored there. British Admiral James Somerville issued orders to mine the port to prevent escape and dispatched Captain Cedric Holland to board the French destroyer Dunkirk to deliver Churchill's ultimatum to French Admiral Marcel Bruno Gensoul. Gensoul stalled, hoping for reinforcements, but Somerville contacted Churchill with a full report and asked how to proceed. Churchill's reply was ominous and direct. He simply said, "Settle matters." The French were sitting ducks. On July 3, 1940, at 5:54 p.m., Admiral Somerville ordered a broadside attack on the French fleet in the harbor. 10 minutes later, every French ship was disabled or destroyed. The attack killed nearly 1,300 French sailors and wounded 350, a greater toll than France suffered during any campaign against the Germans. Two British sailors also died. French officials were livid. They attempted a weak retaliation on the British fleet at Gibraltar, but nothing came of it. Operation Catapult saw no additional incidents as the British boarded French ships in other ports, or the French willingly sailed with them. France broke off diplomatic relations with England, but in a strange and awkward relationship, the countries remained allies against the Germans during the war. Churchill was haunted by the decision he had made. He was certain he would be ostracized for attacking a friendly country, but when he reported his actions to Parliament, he was shocked to see the news received with wild cheering. As tragic as the incident was, he had likely saved many more British lives than the number lost by the French. As for President Roosevelt, there is some indication he knew what Churchill planned in advance of the action. Still, he was awestruck by Churchill's resolve and decisiveness. He responded by sending Churchill the 50 destroyers Churchill had requested. In the long run, he came to realize the agonizing decision Churchill had to make prevented Hitler from dominating the seas. It isn't an exaggeration to conclude Operation Catapult ultimately was a major factor in the Allied victory in World War II. Churchill's resolve to carry out Operation Catapult sealed Franklin Roosevelt's admiration for him. Many other important leaders as well were complimentary of the action. As for Churchill himself, he wrote, "This was the most hateful decision, the most unnatural and painful in which I have ever been connected." It was, in the final analysis, a decision which, in fact, took the ultimate measure of wisdom and strength. For the Whence Came You podcast, this is Steve Harrison with the Masonic Minute.
If you ever felt that just by following the Masonic tenets, wisdom, strength, beauty, the cardinal virtues, prudence, fortitude, temperance, and justice, you would arrive at the correct conclusion or the correct answer to a specific problem. And in this instance, it feels like one of those decisions that Churchill had to make that was absolutely unlike anything we would be able to do at any point in history. To do what England did there in order to stop a greater evil is just incredible and shows the resolve of a person, but to celebrate the resolve of somebody like this might not be appropriate. And yet, here we are in a world free of Nazi Germany, a world where Germany lost the war and so many have been vindicated since the end of that war. These are the kinds of decisions that are just so far outside the realm of anything you think that you'd ever have to do. Decisions that you wish and you hope you never have to make. And certainly, after making such a decision, you have to live with yourself the rest of your life and the public opinion on the things that you did, which, in this case, really, I guess, worked out for Churchill. What an incredible tale of resilience and history and possibly Masonic influence that Steve Harrison has pointed out here. Just a wonderful, wonderful Masonic minute. And I think when we contemplate the decisions made in this historical exposé on this event, which quite possibly saved the world, we'll see even more Freemasonry influencing an impossible decision. Our thanks goes out to illustrious brother Stephen L. Harrison once more for his always illuminating Masonic Minute segments. This was episode number 165. There are 165 Masonic Minutes out there. You can find them on his One Minute Mason YouTube channel. You can find them on the WCY podcast channel right on YouTube, Whence Came You. And if you want to know every time one of these is published, you're going to want to subscribe. Hit those like buttons, all that good stuff, so you get your notifications, and that all really helps us out. All right, let's round out this episode with a random tarot card draw. Now, over the last several weeks, we've introduced this new segment, random tarot card drawing for contemplation and seeing how an ascribed meaning of a card might affect us today and what we can do to apply Masonic virtues in order to become better and overcome these situations. We've gotten some people who thought, "Whoa, man, you are just riding the line. We don't really like the tarot in there. Tarot is not Masonic." That's true. The tarot is not Masonic. Although there is Masonic imagery on tarot decks, the tarot is not inherently Masonic. And because of that, we have to tell you that. I'm not divining the future. I'm not fortune-telling. I'm not conjuring. All we're doing is we're going to pull a random tarot card, look at its ascribed value, the more widely accepted meaning of the particular card, talk about that, and see how thinking about that meaning and applying Masonic virtues to whatever it's saying might help us in our day-to-day life. So this is kind of like a psychological Rorschach test, and I'm going to try my best to be, as always, very objective in my interpretation of a card. I'll give you the traditional Pamela Coleman Smith and Arthur Edward Waite explanation of a card, but then I'll give you a more contemporary and practical meaning of the card. And that is what I think has the most value for all of us. So today, I have randomly picked up one of the decks on my shelf of tarot cards. I'm going to open up this deck of the Hanson Roberts deck. It is a mini deck that I like to pack when I go on trips. The artwork is by Mary Hanson Roberts. That is who created the deck. It's kind of a nice, beautiful, I don't want to say country chic kind of look. A lot of light pastel colors, beautiful artwork, all original. Just going to give the cards a quick shuffle. People ask me, like, is there a... Because there's so much ritual, quote-unquote, attached to tarot, people always ask, do you shuffle a certain number of times? Do you charge your decks? Do you... whatever. No. People ask a question all the time about, is it true you have to be gifted a deck? You know, just like any superstition, if you believe it, sure. Let me go ahead and put these decks back together. I'm going to do a random card draw of all 78 cards, not just the major or minor arcana. I want to mention real quick, if you're interested in tarot and some of that stuff, I've got some links on WZY Podcast where I do a tarot reading for you if you're interested. If you just like tarot content, as well as a behind-the-scenes look at the WZY Podcast, you can follow on TikTok at The Wizard of Arj. ARJ, The Wizard of Arj. It's me. Anyway, let's go ahead and check out what card will we get. Ooh, cool card. Okay. I will post a picture of the card in the Facebook group, the Craftsman Plus group. But we got the Ace of Swords, and we drew it upright. Now, I'm not one for interpreting a card as inverted or not. Sometimes there are other avenues of thought that are presented when a card is drawn upside down versus right side up. I try not to deal with that too much and to focus on a lot of the positive things. Sometimes Arthur Waite decides that, you know, if a card is drawn upside down, it means the opposite of what it meant if you drew it right side up. And I find that to be not as accurate. And I think that's the case with Paul Case as well, the founder of Builders of the Adytum, or Builders of the Adytum, and which he has a whole system on tarot and doesn't really address inversions or not. And that is because I think he views it similar to the way I do. So, what does the Ace of Swords mean for you? Well, first of all, the suit of swords. Swords is one of the four suits of the tarot deck, right? So we've got swords, wands, or rods sometimes. We also have pentacles, sometimes they're called coins, and then we also have cups. Now, each one of those does or can be linked to the four suits of a poker deck. Swords often are thought of as, just like you hear this saying, you know, it's a double-edged sword. Well, the same thing can be said about the swords in a tarot deck, in that there are usually two things to think about. They also represent balance, and what really helps a sword card to balance, and this is kind of a deeper concept to think about, is the idea that the sword has to be balanced by two other attributes, which we call spirit, represented by wands, because spirit is kind of like manifesting and magical. And the other is cups, which is your feelings. And this is what you do in order to derive the most positive value and effect out of the card itself. So the swords is associated with the element of air. It's real, but unseen, right? Unnoticeable. But sometimes you feel a wind or something along those lines. You know it's there. You feel its effects. And what the sword is typically associated with is change and force, power, things along this nature. That being said, what does the Ace of Swords, the Ace of Swords mean? Well, it means in particular, according to Arthur Edward Waite, and we'll talk about his upright value, it means that you're going to have a breakthrough. A new idea, or maybe you have been struggling with a concept for a long time and all of a sudden it just comes together and you have a success, a win. You know, maybe you sold a car recently, you got that car sold, bam, that's a success. You just learned about how to solve some new set of order of operations in a mathematical problem. Bam! Mental clarity. You just had a brand new entrepreneurial idea. New ideas, right? So this is what this kind of represents. Typically, there is a hand that comes out of a cloud, and this is the representation of divine power that's giving you the choices. This is a new energy in terms of your intellect, your mind, your cognizance. So this Ace of Swords says, hey, think about the things that you're involved in right now that you've been struggling with, and those things are going to be like problems. How do you accomplish this? How can you finish this? Whatever those are, it's almost kind of an idea of like the tower, a strike of revelation, because you're going to have a sudden realization or a breakthrough in your conscious understanding of whatever it is that allows you to say, aha, it's your eureka moment. So the Ace of Swords is kind of like that eureka. I have found it. When the card comes up, oftentimes in tarot, it's a calling card of sorts to say, hey, you know that thing that you've been thinking about? Well, you're going to have this breakthrough. Or, hey, you know that idea you've been wanting to do? It's time to do it. So it's kind of a call to action as well. It encourages you to look for the truth in all of the things you're doing in life. So in particular, let's say in another instance, maybe you are just totally taken aback by stories in the news regarding, you know, some sort of thing that has happened. And you're finding yourself looking at both sides of the issues and you just can't figure it out. Well, this not unlike the Ace of Swords. In this way, we're looking for truth and to find equitable justice. So this is another thing, and it tells us that, you know what, we're on the right track, that your subconscious mind is aware of the struggle that you're having to figure this out, and that you eventually will get to it. If we relate this to Freemasonry, it might be that you have been looking at ways to bring more attendance to your educational meeting nights, and you've been brainstorming this, and maybe you've got some different ideas out there. Well, this card is saying, hey, you know that new idea you've got? Try it out. Implement it. It also tells us to weigh both sides of our feelings and our spirit, or at least our spiritual values. In Masonry, this could relate to the tenet of justice, equity. I encourage our Craftsman Plus to take any of the insights they've had from this particular card draw, and let's add it to any of the commentary on the picture of the card that I'll post in the group, if you are so inclined. I certainly will attempt to add my own thoughts there as well, as this card relates to me personally, and share what it could mean for myself. That's it for this week. I want to thank all of you for coming on this journey with me. I want to thank the producers, fellows, contributors, and legacy partners of the WCY podcast. I want to thank everybody out there who shares the show with your friends, lodge brothers, and other people interested in Freemasonry. And if you are interested in how to help support this show that has been bringing Masonic education to over a million people, over 2 million people, honestly, for over 10 years, head on over to WCYpodcast.com. and click on support the show or the shop and see how you can help support us. That's it for this week. We'll talk to you all next week. Again, happy Easter to those who celebrate. And until next week, stay on the level for Whence Came You. I'm Robert Johnson. Take care.
You've been listening to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry with your host, Brother Robert Johnson. Be sure to join us for our next edition.
WCY Media.